Thank you. It's a great honor to come here and present Level 3. I will try for roughly 30 minutes to go through our view on IP and, of course, a little bit about CDN as well, and can't really do that without mentioning video and streaming. I will try, of course, to be a little bit provocative, and hopefully you wouldn't agree with everything that I'm saying. But of course, most of it you have to agree with, because I'm going to be right. First of all, I spent many years in this industry, and I love the internet. I've been doing this for the last 14 years. And a couple of things that I learned over the years is that things never happen as fast as we believe they will. We have a tendency to always overestimate when things are going to happen. But most of the things that we see today might not happen this year or next year, but it will definitely happen in the next 5 years. And I think that's something we have to realize, that a lot of things doesn't come wanted to. And especially some areas that I'm going to cover today, I think been around for a while, but haven't really taken off until at the later stage. First of all, I think you know that Level 3 was created with one purpose, and that was to enable and build to support the growth of the internet. That, of course, been the journey so far, and the journey continues to be to support the internet, but now, of course, with all the convergence that we see in the market, new services, new applications, create new challenges for big IP network, and they have to be able to handle that. And that, of course, is one of the things that we see for the next 5 years. How can actually traditional big IP carriers be able to support all of the new services that are going to come up? But I also wanted to mention that, of course, IP and IP transit is today a commodity, and I think most of us agree that IP transit today is something that people valued as a commodity product on the market. But still, a commodity have different meanings and different values depending on what you are looking for. And in this case, it's not true in all senses, but in this case, size really matters. Because if you really want to distribute traffic on a global basis, the bigger network you are, the more control you will be having on where the traffic goes and with what quality. So for that, of course, Level 3 is really proud of having the biggest network and been having that for a long time. And that actually ensures some kind of differentiation in a commodity market. And we truly believe that the only way forward for big network is to grow in size, because that's really where you can provide scale and a good service for your customer base. To that, of course, you have to have to add the ability of providing what we say reach to the different destinations. And that's the other way of qualifying what quality if you buy high-speed IP from someone. And of course, the shorter path you can provide, the better quality you will have. And that also comes back to the fact that size in this case actually is very, very important. I will try to stay away from telling you too much about Level 3, because I think most of you are aware about Level 3, and we have, of course, a booth outside if you have more information. And I will not mention too many products, because then you know you're going to throw me out. I will try to more stay to the major trends of the market. But still, I think it's very important to just realize that an IP network is like all communication network, dependent on how many networks you connect to yourself. That is truly the value of the network. So, first of all, what do we see that ISP is struggling with on the local or regional markets? First of all, we have the ever quest for peering. Doesn't matter if you're a small ISP or a large ISP, peering seems to be the mantra for everyone. And of course, it might be driven from different reasons. One reason might be to lower the cost for your network. Some might argue it actually gives quality. But the question is that the right path for all networks to go through? Normally, we tend to see that even content providers today are trying to build up huge peering networks. And that is, of course, to try to secure the quality and bypass all the aggregator and transit provider. But to be honest, you know, the major cost for a national ISP is not really the international circuits or the international peering or transit links. The true cost is actually laying within your own network. So from that sense, I think sometimes it's easier to move the focus from where the true bottlenecks are, and that's always going to be the heavily cost you have on your national network, and look into something international. But we truly believe that today actually transit is a very cost-efficient way of doing interconnection and reach other networks. That, of course, is depending on where you are and which market you're operating in. But in a mature market as Poland, I think the transit price is today a very good cost-effective solution to solve your problem. And I think the speaker after me is going to talk about European peering as an issue, so I guess he's going to bring some more light into this topic. Then, of course, if you go to markets that are very unmature, where you have an extremely high transit cost, you will always find incentive to peer away some traffic. But overall, in the mature market, we see more and more carriers actually, or local ISPs actually going away from the peering network to rather find an outsourcing strategy for the peer, for the international transport, just to sort of make sure that they have the best cost possible. But this is a topic that seems to come back and go over time. And if we see where the high-speed IP or the IP transit market is going, not that much is going to change when it comes to the product. I was part of developing one of the first IP transit products back in 96. And if you look at the product specification, it's pretty much the same. What happened over the years is, of course, you added some security features, denial of service, some community support, and other features that have been add-ons. But in theory, the product is very straightforward and very similar to what it was before. And I guess that's always been the strength on this industry and the internet, is that the simplicity it was created by makes it really hard to make major changes with it. And to reflect back on the peering and the transit issue, that is the foundation of the internet, and then of course that stayed the same over a long time. So the major things we believe is going to happen when it comes to the high-speed IP is more or less that we increase the speeds. Bigger and bigger interfaces, being able to handle more and more traffic, that's going to be essential. Because regardless of the growth we've seen in the past, it doesn't seem to disappear. It seems to always continue to be 60 to 100% in a good, well-run network. And to my knowledge, even the closed networks just have bandwidth growth based on their own applications need of 40%. Just the ability to handle all of that traffic is really the big challenge for all the IP transport or IP transit products. And that, of course, is mind-blowing when you think about 60 to 80% growth over the next 5 years. The traffic volume is enormous. And looking back at the years, you always can't grasp what we see today. You never thought we would have that 10 years ago. But again, this is not something that is made up. This is proven over the last 10, 15 years, that 60 to 80% volume growth is what you have. Then it's just a matter of which kind of technology will we use. Will it be 40 gigabit Ethernet, when we will see the first 100 gigabit connection customers? We can still support some of it, but that's the major thing that we see on the development side when it comes to the high-speed IP product. On the other side, something that are evolving slowly is of need of port for E6. This is also, for me, a quite funny story, because when I started back in 96, I met one person was sharing the ISDF group for IPv6 migration, and he started sharing that group back in 92, and the aim was to be done with the migration to IPv6 before 96. We are now sitting here 14 years later, and it's just taking off. Everyone has known for a long time that we have to go to V6 sooner or later, but it's just, again, the resilience of the current technology with V4 and the BGP has actually made it possible to stay with all V4 addresses for a very, very long time. But I think everyone is certain now that we have reached the end of that road, and now it's time for us to start the migration path. And more of our customers is now requiring native V6 support. We have to do that on our routers, we have to do dual stacks, and we have to be able to do that in every place in our network. Most carriers will do that. It's interesting to see, of course, that the big IPv6 networks are not the traditional big IP carriers. You can actually see some other companies doing this. But it will be mandatory, and I think you all know in Japan, you can't get V4 addresses for the last 3-4 years in Japan. You're forced to do V6. And you will see that as well here. Sadly enough, it's not that much traffic. So you support it, but you don't have that much traffic. But I guess that's also going to change over time. the more end users that start using V6 will of course start pushing more and more traffic. But still, you don't have that much content that are V6 dependent, which means that you don't push that much traffic. But at least we are certain that this is the path we have to go through, and we will of course build the support in all of our network. But it's going to be necessary, and the migration has started. And here is a list of where most countries are when it comes to migration. This of course lists networks, again not traffic. I would love if this represents a portion of the traffic, but that's of course not true. Poland is not that high up on the list. I think 4% right now is V6 networks, but we expect that to grow rapidly over the next coming years. And I also see on the agenda and the program here that there's going to be a couple of sessions regarding V6, which I think is going to be quite interesting to follow. But that's one of the few new things that I see happening on the high-speed IP market, that this is actually something you have to build in or request as a customer as well that your carriers can support in a good way. So, over to a slightly different topic, still equally popular, content. You either love it or you hate it, but I guess it's necessary to have. First of all, content, as much as we wish to, can never be distributed to all networks. Many ISPs are dreaming on the scenario that all content providers will come to them and start paying for distributing content on the network. But sorry, that will never happen. Content are by default centralized and like to be centralized. There's very, very few big content providers that can enable themselves to centralize the distribution. Many have tried back in the 90s, we saw Yahoo and Alta Vista with an ambition to be distributed globally. Of course, they ran out of money and the structure of the service didn't really enable them to build it everywhere. Today, I guess we see the two big ones, Microsoft and Google, with an ambition to distribute the content. But will they be able to connect to all 12,000 ISPs globally? Will they be able to build data centers in every country to support that distribution? Of course not. Not even the big ones can. And we have to remember, most content don't even want to do networks. If you go to content like Disney, they have no ambition of building a network to distribute it to all countries all over the world. They would like to concentrate on building content. So it's very difficult to have that ambition to get content to actually be some kind of extra payment into your networks. And then, of course, everyone tried different methods of trying to force content to go down that path. I don't know if you're aware of the net neutrality discussion. It was a really big thing a couple of years ago. Especially the big ISPs in the US wanted content to be forced to pay them and had the right to discriminate people for using the network for distributing traffic. And I guess trying to wall garden or use QS as a method of protecting your own termination to the end users worked in theory quite well, especially in a closed market where you had a monopoly. But in a free open market, that's not really the way forward. Because as long as one competitor open up and give you free access to content, I think your ability to wall garden your network won't really work. This is a major thing for ISPs, but it's even a bigger thing for mobile operators. And it's quite funny to be out presenting for mobile operators because they are really struggling with getting the frequency to be enough, who had the right to set video signals to the end devices, and they are, I guess, the most wall garden network we have still. But they also have to accept the fact that this going forward will not really work. So, after been trying that for a couple of years, you have to come up with a new thing, and the latest and greatest thing is, of course, CDN. And CDN, whatever CDN are, I guess you can find hundreds of different definitions, but content delivery networks was last year the hottest topic, and probably will be the hottest topic this year also. CDN is of course not a new thing. Started already back in, some people say 96. I started to see it 98, 99, 2000. And of course the CDN was constructed based on the fact that content cannot be distributed because they like to be centralized. And how can you find a secure way of actually distributing that? And again, we saw a journey of CDNs. Of course, the One of the bigger ones early on was Akamai, with ambition to place servers in every network in the world. They also realized that that cost a lot of money, so after a while they realized a few networks was good enough, and then of course we used transit to reach the rest of them. Because again, it's very hard to get connection to all networks in the world, and it's going to cost you tons of money. And now, of course, as a way of adding value to your local network, people will then try to create CDN to be able to charge for traffic that they can handle in the network. And also, most of the hardware vendors today are trying to build in support for CDN in their end devices so you can actually utilize that to distribute it. I don't know how many will actually do it, but most ISPs and carriers of size has announced that they're going to try to do some kind of CDN going forward. I tend to rather like the fact that networks should be content aware, and if that's a CDN, it can always be discussed, but the network should be content aware, so at least you know how you're going to handle the different content you transport in your network. That is very important. But if that's a CDN, we can discuss and argue. So, I come back to the distribution challenge, and I told you that content can't really be centralized. But of course, the content owner is the one that normally, if it's a good content, try to monetize their asset one way or another. Today, most of the content that makes money is advertising-based. There's very few services that are subscriber-based that actually makes a lot of money. Online gaming is one example where we've actually been able to monetize and have a subscriber-based model. Otherwise, it seems like the advertising model is really the key. But they really would like to distribute this as a global basis. They need some kind of network to distribute that and get the right SLAs for it. And that's what always the CDN has been doing. The CDN has always been delivering an SLA to the content owner and saying, we can deliver this in a certain way with certain parameters. And of course, utilizing a global IP network for it. Then, of course, the ISP challenge is, okay, we get all of this traffic into a network. Can we monetize this? Can we make money in this model? And what kind of pricing structure would we have? Then, of course, in the end, the one that really determines if it works is the end users. Because the end users are the one using and subscribing to the content. And if they are not happy with the experience of reaching the content, they will choose another content provider, another content service. So for that side, the quality of experience is coming from the end users. And remember, the relationship when it comes to consuming content is not between the consumer and the ISPs. It's always between the consumer and the content owner. And we see more of this commercial or high quality demanding content that is going to be more sort of obvious for. If you, let's say you pay 10 euros to watch a football game online, of course, you go to the website and you subscribe to the football game, and you expect all the networks in between to be able to deliver that so you can view it. If you can't view it, then it's a question, whose fault is it? You call up your ISP, and the ISP will say, my DSL connection to you is working perfectly fine, so it's not a problem on my side. Then, of course, you have to contact the content owner that actually gets your money, and they have to explain that, yeah, we have an SLA with someone that actually can distribute it. And this is a very complex situation where you have a direct commercial relationship between two parties, but there's a lot of actors in between that actually ensures that it's going to work. And especially the last ISP that only gets paid from the sort of consumer and not really from the content owner. This is not something new, and people have been trying to figure out this for a long time, but it is the big challenge for using internet as a distribution chain for really valuable content. So, a few words then on what we see as trends when it comes to CDNs. As I mentioned, most carriers are thinking about deploying CDNs, not only carriers, but also ISPs. You might argue why. There is a couple of good reasons for it. One is, of course, that most of the traffic growth going forward will actually be some kind of large files, and mainly video. And if you think that today's volume will be double and will be large file video distributed over your network, you have to find methods of using some kind of content mechanism to actually distribute it in a smarter way. As I said, content would love to be aggregated in one location. So let's say we put all content in Europe in one location in Frankfurt. The network you have to distribute all of that video will it's just not possible. So you have to find ways of delivering that closer to the end users. And that is really why, even if you don't sell CDN or content delivery networks as a service, you have to have it to distribute it smart in your network. It doesn't have to be a commercial service. It can actually be a network engineering on the content layer rather than on the network layer. But also that what really has changed a little bit is that the key cost component for most CDNs is the network part, because of this high volume of traffic. So if I look at most of the local CDNs, their biggest challenge to be profitable and prosper over long term is to find a good way of distributing the content without paying too much on the network side. And both of these two components really drives a marriage between CDN and network providers. Because if the key components for a CDN is the network, and the key challenge for a network provider is all of the large files, then it makes perfect sense to marry these two together, so you actually create the CDN and IP networks together, and then you actually get a very cost and content-aware network. And of course, the strength for the carrier that the traditional CDNs don't have is that we have the network. It's already there, it's already built out, we already have the network connected to us. So what we just have to add is the content awareness. So this is just two slides, and now sadly it's going to say level 3 CDN, but I guess you figured out that we believe in CDNs, otherwise I wouldn't mention CDN that much. But the great benefit, as I said, a carrier will have that the traditional CDN won't have is that we control all the assets involved to actually do the distribution. That gives a cost advantage over time, which is key to be successful. You have to own your own collocation facilities. You have to be able to control IP transit and the peering and the server infrastructure. You have to be able to have those facilities. Otherwise, we strongly believe you cannot stay competitive over time. This is a key cost component for every CDN, and I can guarantee you sorting that out is going to be a challenge if you want to stay in the market. So that's why in the next 5 years, you won't see many of the server-based CDNs surviving without finding a strong network partner. On the other side, I don't believe we will see that many network providers that won't add a CDN to their own features. So most of the next generation IP networks or CDNs will be combined because that's what's necessary to stay long-term competitive. So, I came back to the slide that Level 3's network was built to enable growth on the internet. But we also remember that the growth of the internet, as I said, is driven by video traffic. So content is one area, but it's especially video that's the next big challenge for us. And today, most of us know that video streaming from a service standpoint can be two things, or it can actually be many things. But let me start with two things. One, it can be the YouTube lookalike video, which actually started the boom. YouTube is not really commercialized in the sense that it's a subscriber-based or an advertised-based service. It's starting to become, but in the beginning, it was more of a, if it works, it works. It didn't really mean that much. That also meant that the delivery mechanism for a traditional YouTube video is not really that quality dependent. But that was the first generation of streaming services. What we believe is more important going forward is the content that actually requires some kind of commercial relationship. And we have started to see that trend on most markets now that you have the sports on demand or live feeds that are really sort of taking off. And that requires a certain quality because people pay for that kind of service. And that is for us the natural next step, that you put more of the catch-up TV and live events on the internet and use that as a distribution channel. And at least my experience is when you travel on trains and you see people younger than me, that they're not even used to having TVs anymore. They're more used to having a PC at home. So this is a natural way for them to consume some of the TV shows or TV shows or sports they want to watch. So I think that's the next natural evolution. And the first phase will, of course, be internet TV, which I truly believe in the next 5 years. That's the good thing when you work with strategy. You can always say in the next 5 years, and no one can prove me wrong. But truly, that IPTV, as it's distributed today, is just a phase, because they're using the same business logic as the traditional cable TV or satellite TV. But over time, when you bring it over the internet, when people can actually consume it whenever they are, whenever they want to, it creates a much bigger freedom. But then, of course, if you want to have linear broadcasting on your network, that puts a lot of constraint on how you actually build your network. Is this happening today? Yeah, sort of. I think we have shown that HDTV can be delivered over the internet with the right quality. Can we do it in broader scale? No, I don't think anyone can do that on a broader scale today. If you want to do linear TV, linear TV for you who are not broadcasters, is traditional TV. It's of course impossible if you want to reach 100,000 people today with an HD quality over the public internet in any market will be a challenge. But if that is a consumer demand, and I think most consumers would say that they prefer a more flexible way of viewing TV, they would like to create their own shows they want to watch, and they would like to create when they want to see it, and that you can't do today on in a good way on traditional distribution methods, but the internet and internet TV can actually do that. An interesting thing is, who is actually going to take the lead in this distribution of the new internet TV? Will it be the manufacturer of the devices? Will it be the local ISPs? Will it be the cable TV operators? Will it be the content owners? It's good as well to work with strategy. I have no idea. Everyone is trying. And we guess we will see over time who actually has the best value proposition. I just know that Philips, among other TV vendors, they today are delivered with a hard drive and an Ethernet connection. You connect that hard drive to your broadband connection, and you can actually watch TV from the port in Amsterdam. You just bypass the local IPTV provider, use the broadband to go to the portal. So they are betting on bypassing the traditional value proposition or traditional business model to just get another piece of the cake. Will that succeed? Again, I have no idea, but at least we see that when everyone is going in that direction, there will be something happening over the next coming years when it comes to TV and using internet as a distribution channel for it. The good thing is, of course, that peer-to-peer is declining. I think peer-to-peer as a technology will play a role in doing distribution of linear TV. But peer-to-peer, the way it's been using for, should we say, majority questionable legal download, will over time, of course, not be the main bandwidth driver. But again, as a technology, it's a very good technology to do good traffic distribution if you get it in a structured way. So I think most of the new streaming services you see have the proprietary peer-to-peer solution to actually find a smarter distribution method. So I guess it's going to be commercialized one way or another to find methods of doing that smarter. Trying to come to my conclusions, I have some minutes for questions, if you have any. The problem is, of course, that ISPs are struggling with when you have all of this over-the-top video distribution is, how do you get that to work in your existing business model? And if I had an answer, I guess I would be CEO for a local ISP. But I guess that's the challenge that we stand in front, because it's going to drive so much cost. And because this relationship is normally not with you when it comes to who actually distributes the video. Again, Philips will not pay a local ISP any money for doing this distribution. We are just trying to monetize it on their own way. And then, of course, you will have a very hard time to charge more to the end users. And that's, I guess, the challenge for broadband in general in all markets, that we started too low with a flat fee, eat as much as you can. And now everyone trying to backpedaling, saying, no, we didn't really mean that you could consume all of that. You can just consume a little bit, because now I can't afford to upgrade the network. I think the mobile operators, again, are fantastic with this, because in the US, some mobile operators are coming up with the idea that, no, 2 megabit didn't mean that you could use 2 megabit. 2 megabit means that it was just a pipe. But you can only set a couple of bytes in that megabit pipe. So So they're trying to backtrack from the fact they gave up too much too cheap. I don't know exactly how that's going to work out, but the only thing I know is when content becomes commercialized, they will be dependent on the network to distribute it. And if the network can't distribute it, they can't sell the service. So here we all have to cooperate to find a model over, again, the next couple of years to figure out how can we actually secure that the local operator can survive with their investments and at the same time secure that we get content delivered in a good way to the end users. Here's not only business model, here's technology that has to happen for this to actually work out. So when it comes to a very populated and a stressful picture, you know, for internet broadcasting, this is just trying to say it's so many components that has to be in place. And if you want to do internet broadcasting, which is of course where most of the, we believe most of the future will be for distributing some high value content, you have to be able to do tons of different things. None of these are something that are in the genes of a traditional IP carrier. This is different, but this is also the future. So we have to learn it, we have to grasp it, we have to build for it. It's everything from sort of uploading content to transcoding content, the ability to do DRM, so you know that you have the content in a secure way. You have to have some kind of content management, you have to be able to sort of handle the advertising side. Of course, the storage, and then the easy part for normal ISPs and carriers is the distribution part, but it's just one component. So if you want to go and offer solutions for any of the high-end content that are going to be commercialized, this is a similar picture that you have to draw up for yourself. So this is really where most effort is going to be spent for at least level three in the next coming years to actually build up this. We have most of this in place, but of course we have to add features over time as well. But this is going to be a necessity to do the high-valued content. We skip that picture then. So, back to some conclusions. If I can draw anything, I've been painting a large picture and I'm going to try to narrow it down with some of the conclusions. Hearing issue, always a hot topic. Is that really the big problem? As I come back, I don't think that really is the one that kills the P&L for an ISP. It's more of looking to your local network. Don't add too much complexity. Build it simple. Realize that the true value of an ISP is actually the ability to build a good working IP network. That's really the key essential thing to be competitive. Is really CDN the path? Not sure, depending on where you are or what you want to do. There is a lot of CDNs available today. Building your own might not be the easiest way to do, and don't underestimate the complexity of doing it. It's not really like putting three servers and you have your CDN in place. And then, of course, the walled garden, I think, is at least from our perspective, not the right path. That is really not something we recommend anyone to do. But design your networks as much as you can to realize that most of the things has to come locally. Use interconnections and other methods to distribute your traffic in a smart way. Whatever you do, stay away from complexity. There is a reason why most of the global IP VPNs have a problem with the networks, because it's enormously complex. IP is beautiful, but can be complex. MPL is beautiful, but can be complex. So the more features you add, the more complexity you add, the more cost you're actually going to introduce your network. And sadly for us all, don't expect anyone else to pay for your problems or solve your problems by paying for them. They won't. There's no night they're going to be riding in the sunset and give you tons of money because you built a great network. Figure out your own business model and try to find your own path to success. That is, I think, the advice I can give to all of you over time. And for a company like Level 3, of course, we are the facilitator for many of you and are helping you, many of you, in delivering whatever services you have. You can say we are the infrastructure, and we add in components after components to be the infrastructure provider of choice. Then, of course, it is the enterprise, it is the mobile customers, it is the broadband customers that are the livelihood for all of us, that actually are the one using the service, and of course trying to come to the content providers. We are trying to connect everyone together, and internet is the path for it, and all the future for at least most of us. So, with that, I would like to thank you all for listening to me. Thank you.